When I signed up for studying at the university, I thought being a physicist was my dream job. But here I am on YouTube. How did that happen? I think I owe you an explanation. When I started studying at the university, my expectations were based on biographies of scientists. They wrote a lot of letters to each other. They went to conferences. They were thinkers and tinkerers and had sometimes heated but usually respectful arguments. This is what I expected. Yes, that was hopelessly naive, I know, but in my defense, I don't come from an academic background. I come from a family of teachers and accountants and post office workers. They're normal people. I did an internship in the chemical industry and another one in a bank, gleefully stamping transfer slips. I just didn't know anyone with a PhD. And those were the early 1990s. You couldn't just ask the internet, and within a day, you'd have 2,000 people giving you advice and some marriage proposals along with that. The first years at university were glorious because for the first time in my life, I was in the company of other people who were like me. At school, I had always been the weird one for actually being interested in science and maths. But at the university, everyone was like that. We talked about everything from maths to philosophy, physics, and politics. And yes, alcohol was involved. It was a really good time. And that was all very nice, except I was getting older and still didn't have a decent job. I made a little money by selling oil paintings. Those were the days, people. But I didn't seriously think I was a particularly good artist. I really had to get a normal job and stop asking my grandma to help out with paying rent. I thought that the Institute of Physics would give me a job when I'd finished my master's degree with good grades, though technically at the time that was called a diploma. I thought they'd give me a job because that had worked for all the other students previously. If your grades were good, they'd offer you a job as a graduate student. It wasn't particularly great pay, but it was a real job. And that's where things started to go wrong. Because I finished my exams with excellent grades. I don't mean to brag, but I think you need this context. But I wasn't offered a job because I'm a woman. I'm not guessing that that's what happened. I know because they told me. You see, the guy who was head of the institute told me that, since I'm female, I should apply for a scholarship that was exclusively for women in the natural sciences, because then the institute wouldn't have to pay for me. Makes sense, doesn't it? So, well, I applied for the scholarship and got it, all right. But these scholarships don't come with any benefits like pension savings and health insurance, and I know this sounds very German, but these things matter to us. Also, I was now reminded on various occasions that I wasn't actually employed at the institute. I was just there because I had this scholarship for women. And that was totally true. This, by the way, is why I'm against programs or positions that are exclusively for women. I think that treating women differently just reinforces the prejudice that women are less capable than men. But I digress. All right, you might say, stop whining, at least I did have an income now. Yes, so far so good. At this time, I was the only woman at the institute who was not in the administration. The next problem was that the head of the institute made a lot of money selling textbooks. He wrote very little of these textbooks himself. Rather, he gave assignments for parts of the books to students and postdocs, which is why, in case you've ever wondered, these textbooks are so discontinuous and partly repetitive. He expected me to also work for him, to which I said no. I was then ordered into his office, in which he gave me a very angry speech, according to which I wasn't loyal to all the other students who did their part. I told him that I was under no obligation to work for him and didn't care what the rest of the students were thinking. He got angry. I laughed at him. He started shouting that I was fired and physically shoved me out of his office. True story. The irony is that he couldn't fire me because, if you remember, he had refused to hire me in the first place. I was paid by that scholarship for women, and that wasn't managed by the institute, but by the office of the university president. I'm not just telling you this because it's entertaining. It was also a rather rude awakening. awakening. It made me realize that this institute wasn't about knowledge discovery. It was about money making. And the more I saw of academia, the more I realized it wasn't just this particular institute and this particular professor. It was generally the case. The moment you put people into big institutions, the goal shifts from knowledge discovery to money making. Here's how this works. If a researcher gets a scholarship or research grant, then the institution gets part of that money. It's called the overhead. Technically, that's meant to pay for offices and equipment and administration, etc. But academic institutions then pay part of their staff from this overhead. So they need to keep that overhead coming. Small scholarships don't make much money, but research grants can be tens of millions of dollars. And the overhead can be anything between 15 and 50%. This is why research institutions exert loads of pressure on researchers to bring in grant money. And partly they do this by keeping the researchers on temporary contracts so that they need grants to get paid themselves, while the administrators who are paid on the overhead usually have permanent positions. But you get used to this kind of crap. And the overhead isn't even the real problem. The real problem is that the easiest way to grow in academia is to pay other people to produce papers on which you, as the grant holder, can put your name. That's how academia works. Grants pay students and postdocs to produce research papers for the grant holder. And those papers are what the supervisor then uses to apply for more grants. The result is a paper production machine in which students and postdocs are burned through to bring in money for the institution. Most of that money comes from your taxes. After my PhD, I applied for another scholarship and got that, and then I got a postdoc job and a grant and another job and another job and another grant and so on. And I began to understand what you need to do to get a grant or get hired. You have to work on topics that are mainstream enough, but not too mainstream. You want them to be a little bit edgy, but not too edgy. No, it needs to be something that fits into the existing machinery. And since most grants are 3 years or 5 years at most, it also needs to be something that can be wrapped up quickly. The more I saw of this, the more I realized this wasn't how I wanted to spend my life. The other thing that happened was that the more I saw of the foundations of physics, the more I became convinced that most of the research there wasn't based on sound scientific principles. I know this sounds wild, like I'm the crank next door on YouTube, and maybe that's what I am. But I like to think that my argument was, and still is, very academic. I never intended it to be offensive. I just explained why thinking up new particles isn't a good strategy for progress in physics, and why that had gotten an entire discipline stuck. And naive as I was, I expected physicists to think about it. I expected rational debate. But that never came. No one was interested. No one is interested. They were interested in writing more papers. And that's what they need all these particles and other wild ideas for, to write papers, to get grants, to get postdocs, to write more papers, and round it goes. Meanwhile, I had moved half around the world because that's standard for postdocs. It's just expected of you. And at some point, you just accept the constant moving as normal because the only people you know also do it. It's incredibly hostile to personal life, detrimental to mental health, and women suffer from it more because our reproductive reality is that we need to start families earlier than men. By my mid-30s, I had somehow miraculously managed to get married and have two children, but I couldn't find a job anywhere near my husband. So for several years, I commuted from Frankfurt to Stockholm. And yes, those cities are actually in different countries. After 5 years of my murder commute, I just couldn't do it anymore. My mental health was worse than ever. I was permanently stressed out. I was feeling guilty for not working more and not spending more time with my kids. I had several nervous breakdowns. I was constantly ill. I decided I'd go back to Germany and not move out of the country again until the kids were out of school. Instead, I applied for research grants on projects projects that lasted 1, 2, or 3 years and that could be located in Germany. A lot of water has flown under the bridge since, so let me be honest. At this point, I'd figured out what you need to put into a grant proposal to get the money, and that's what I did. I applied for grants on research projects because it was a way to make money, not because I thought it would leave an impact in the history of science. It's not that what I did was somehow wrong. It was, and still is, totally state of the art. I did what I said I'd do in the proposal. I did the calculation. I wrote the papers. I wrote my reports, and the reports were approved. Normal academic procedure. But I knew it was bullshit, just as most of the work in that area is currently bullshit, and just as most of academic research that your taxes pay for is almost certainly bullshit. The real problem I had, I think, is that I was bad at lying to myself. Of course, I tried to tell myself and anyone who was willing to listen that at least unofficially on the side, I'd do the research that I thought was worth my time, but that I couldn't get money for because it was too far off the mainstream. But that research never got done because I had to do the other stuff that I actually got paid for. Then COVID came, and it reminded me how short life really is. I pivoted, applied for funding on the research that I wanted to do, that I was rather afraid wouldn't get funded. It didn't get funded. And so here we are on YouTube, where I talk about why I love science and hate it at the same time. This sounds like a sad story, and in some sense it is, because it's the story of a young scientist whose dream died. And it's the story of an old scientist who thinks they could have made a difference if it hadn't been necessary to get past 5 reviewers who didn't share my interests, because that's what it comes down to eventually. It's not that they say there's something wrong with your proposal. It just doesn't excite them because it's not the main current interest. My problem has always been that I just didn't fit in. But there's a happy ending in that I found you. A community of people who share my interests. Well, more or less. Or why the heck have you not been watching my video on indefinite causal structures? It's been quite a change to switch from academia to being self-employed. I had to learn how to write invoices. I had to register a business. I have a tax consultant, 2 agents, and a 12-person team that's distributed over half the world. Very steep learning curve. Mistakes were made. But eventually, today, I feel good about it, because unlike academic research, this is an honest trade. You get some of my knowledge, I get some of your attention. I like the simplicity of that. And I'm also heartened that there are so many people who care about obscure problems in the foundations of physics, though I think you underestimate the relevance of indefinite causal structures. So, that's my story, no more and no less. Please do not think that my experience with academia is universal or that I've claimed it is. I know many people who love academia the way it is and who think it's working just fine. I'm just not one of them. Have never been, and I don't think I'll ever be. I'm not sure if I'm going to post this video. It's a bit too much, isn't it?